Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, well, I won't say it's one band at a time. I won't even say it's one group of bands at a time or one genre at a time. We are taking on an entire year in music. We've done this before, did this in the first two seasons of Soundography. So we're doing it again because it's so awesome to do. And it's such a nice break from the usual band after band after band.
No, it's a nice break from the onslaught of one band over and over again throughout the week.
It totally is. So much more variety.
Yeah, it really opens up your brain.
And what a year to pick. The year we decided to settle on was the year of my birth. 1969. You were born the year after, right?
I'm a 71 kid.
71, okay.
And I looked, and it might not be as exciting if we do 71. When Devil Woman was one of the biggest hits, you're in trouble.
What was one of the biggest hits?
Devil Woman by Cliff Richard.
Yeah, Cliff Richard. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yikes. No, this was an amazing surprise because there's so much great music that came out in 1969. So many landmark albums that came out in 1969.
And events.
Right? Yeah, and events. Let's get into those events, actually. We're going to go month by month, as we always do, starting with January. On January 12th, Led Zeppelin released their debut album.
It's so weird thinking of them as releasing their debut in 69 because it's so not the 60s. It's such a 70s reference, but they clearly were paving the way for something new.
I think so. You nailed it too. Like when you think of 60s music, you think of a couple different things, right? You think of some funk, some soul stuff that was really huge in the 60s. You think of like the quote unquote summer of love and the hippie music movement, Hair and
Dawning of Aquarius.
Aquarius, right? Let the Sun Shine, all that stuff. And you think of like, all right, well, let's think about the 70s. Then you've got your heavy metal. You think of Led Zeppelin. And of course, their biggest stuff was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. But I think that they actually started in 1969, released their first album in 1969. It feels like they were so ahead of the game. They were on the cusp of something so much bigger. And as we
find out later in the year, this was their first release in 1969.
Right. Oh, right. Right. That's a good point. They don't waste time with coming up with clever album titles. Led Zeppelin.
Yep. They don't. Yeah. Why spend the time coming up with a title when you just put a picture of some stones and some pillars and just run with it?
That's right. Is that a thing we don't see as much anymore these days?
It stones feels like and pillars on albums?
The self-titled first debut release. Yeah.
Okay. So the first two things that jumped into my head was Metallica didn't self-title until their fifth album.
Well, a lot of bands, right? A lot of bands.
Yeah. And then Dream Theater didn't self-title until like their 10th or something like that.
Right. But,
right. I think that they're not as common as they used to be.
Totally. Like you look at, Chainsmokers, you know, they released their first album this year
called Lung Cancer, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, that's exactly right.
That would be so funny if all of their titles were based in some sort of malady picked up from smoking.
Oh, that's horrible.
The Chainsmokers, the Yellow Teeth album.
Right. The hold on. Let me step outside for a minute. Be right back. But like looking at all of these, I think Harry Styles, who came out with his first solo album this year, is the only one I'm looking at in the top 20 that did a self-titled debut.
Do you think it's because with the way marketing works now, they have two options for hashtags? And I'm not being silly. I'm being very genuine here.
I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, if you come out and you're Led Zeppelin and you release an album in the age of social media, you're going to get the hashtag Led Zeppelin, and you want to have like the hashtag something else, right?
Yeah.
Black Dog or rock and roll or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at 2016, again, you know, the biggest releases, how far down the list do I have to go before I get to a self-titled debut album? It is not yeah, super .com Blossoms looks like the first one, and they're about 30 down the list.
Wow.
So the age of the self-titled debut, and I think you're absolutely right that it's a secondary marketing opportunity. Mm-hmm. You get your name out there, you get your album title out there, and you can kind of have some fun with it. And we're just not seeing that that self-titled debut as much anymore. About a week later, the 18th, Pete Best, former drummer for the Beatles, won a defamation lawsuit against the band. Any idea what a defamation lawsuit? That's pretty heavy duty.
I looked for that, and there were some details, but I didn't dig too deep because we were just kind of skimming along the surface of the year.
Sure.
I had no idea that the split was so hostile. I thought really? They just picked up a new drummer and were on their way. I had no idea that there was a lawsuit behind it.
Yeah, but such a long time too to wait.
Well, had to wait till they get successful so you could get some money out of it.
But they were successful long before.
I know.
They were just ending in 69.
I know.
I get what you're doing. Well, he got fired for his drumming by George Martin, producer of the Beatles, said that he was dissatisfied with his drumming at the Parlophone audition. So they sacked him and replaced him, of course, with Ringo Starr.
And I will say this. I make lots of jokes about Ringo as a drummer. Mm-hmm. But Ringo, when it boils down to it, he was a hell of a drummer and an equal part of that band.
Right. Oh, right. For sure. Yeah. Looking at this, Pete Best maintained for years that he was fired because the other three members were jealous of his success with the female fan base. Okay, Pete. Yeah, that's great. That's real good.
What he won in court?
No, I think that was just what he was telling people who, like, in interviews and things that. Yeah, his departure from the Beatles sent him into a depressed state. Cynthia Lennon, John Lennon's first wife, wrote in her 2006 book, John, that Pete Best barely spoke to anyone for 2 weeks after he got fired. So he really dove into depression. Oh, here we go. Here's the deal. Best also took issue with an interview that the group did with Playboy magazine in February 1965, where they asked about Starr's origins with the Beatles. Lennon McCartney mentioned that Ringo often sat in with him when Best couldn't make it. And while that part was true, the former drummer took exception to the idea that the absences were the result of his pill popping. So, that's the defamation of character. They said that his drug use was what kept him from being at some of those performances. And so that's why they brought Ringo in.
I thought it's because he's out with a female fan base and they just,
he's just tied up literally. Later that month on the 30th, the Beatles performed for the very last time in public on the roof of the Apple building. And it was filmed for the film, for the movie, Let It Be. It was also, parodied by the Simpsons
and
the Sharps.
Didn't Snoop Dogg do a rooftop thing for one of his releases, and didn't U2 play on a roof too?
U2 did it as well. I think even was the same roof of the Apple building. Did not clear it. Which song was it? Where the Streets Have No Name? It was for something that they used for Rattle and Hum. And
I think the Streets Have No Name. It was mentioned in the Defiant Ones, the documentary on HBO.
Right. So that classic rooftop performance by the Beatles, which is an interesting thing. Again, you know,
did they know it was going to be their last performance?
I think so. I knew that McCartney wanted to get out of the Beatles performing live, and I think I don't think he had much resistance from the rest of the band. In February, on the 3rd, Eric Burdon and the Animals broke up. The Beatles, also on that day, hired Alan Klein as their new manager against the wishes of Paul McCartney. On the 15th, Vicki Jones was arrested for impersonating Aretha Franklin. She was so good, nobody in the audience knew that she was a fake. So she got up on stage and performed as Aretha Franklin in February of 1969. I love that.
So my theory here is that if she was really that good, Aretha should have hired her and then had two gigs scheduled in separate places. And they could have worked out a deal.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that would have been perfect. I think, you know, even if you had her as her own performer, or even as a backup singer, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of happy ending, rock and roll happy ending, that I feel like this needs.
Yeah, it really does. It needs something other than she was arrested, because that's a waste of talent.
Yeah, it totally is. So let's see.
Hasn't anyone ever seen the movie Dave?
Or Rockstar?
With, yes. Marky Mark and his Funky Bunch.
So apparently this happened in Ocala, Florida. And they found out that she'd been duped by a crooked concert promoter who basically said, hey, come to Fort Myers. You're going to get to sing with Aretha Franklin. When she arrived and she had no money, he said that he was going to throw her in the bay if she didn't go on stage as Aretha Franklin. So she went up on stage, performed. In her court hearing, the prosecutor said, you know, go ahead and sing, you know, show us that you sound like Aretha Franklin. And so she did, and she sounded so much like Aretha Franklin, the judge spared her because the audience wasn't even able to tell the difference.
She earned his R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Oh, geez. hashtag dad joke. Early on. We're not even a quarter of the way through the year, Ham. On the 17th of February, Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan recorded together. The song Girl from the North Country would be the only thing released from those sessions.
When I read this and I was typing it in, I realized that we should have heard more from these two. This should have been a collaboration that happened more often.
So if you'll take a trip to the North Country Fair, where the winds get heavy, on the pole,
over the line.
Please say hello.
For sure, yeah, because I mean, you had all those classic recording sessions with Johnny Cash and Elvis and the Sun Records mm-hmm. sessions.
Yeah,
how come we don't have more recordings? And these have to be something that they've got recorded, and that they could release at any time. I guess maybe Bob Dylan has a lock on it, right?
Probably.
Crazy. A week later, Johnny Cash would perform at the San Quentin State Prison and perform the song A Boy Named Sue.
One of his many prison appearances or prison references in his career.
Right. Not the classic one, Folsom.
No, not Folsom, but he's definitely developing a connection with probably his fan base. I mean, and I don't mean that in a snarky way. He knew who was listening to his stuff, and he was kind of helping connect with them.
For sure. Yeah. And what a great gig. I mean, you know.
Talk about an audience that has to participate.
I don't want to use the term captive audience, but. in March, on the 1st, Jim Morrison of The Doors was arrested for allegedly exposing himself at a performance in Miami. I remember seeing hearing about this and, of course, seeing the didn't hear about it at the time, obviously. It wasn't born yet. But I remember seeing this performed by Val Kilmer in the movie The Doors, the mm-hmm. biopic The Doors.
Which is actually a fairly good movie, if I remember it correctly.
I do remember it being pretty good. And
weird, but good.
Right. How many times is – so Jim Morrison Val Kilmer performed as Jim Morrison for The Doors. He also appeared as Elvis Presley in the – True Romance uh-huh. film. I'm trying to think of what other rock stars Val Kilmer could play. Can we get him as Kurt Cobain in the Nirvana movie or maybe
Talking Heads,
right? I'll have him as sure he could be David Byrne. Uh-huh. Love it.
Yeah.
On March 7th, Pinball Wizard was released by The Who as a single with the B-side Dogs Part 2. Paul McCartney married Linda McCartney on the 12th. Well, Linda Eastman, and mm-hmm. She changed her name, of course, to Linda McCartney. On the same day, George Harrison and his wife were arrested for possession of hash in the UK.
I wonder if that was coming back from the wedding or if they weren't invited. And I mean, I wonder.
They had to have been invited.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't bad blood. I don't remember there being bad blood between McCartney and Harrison. So they had to be. They had to be coming back from the wedding, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just pulled over and there it goes.
That's right. That's right. Later that same month, on the 20th, John Lennon married Yoko Ono.
No, no. Sorry. I was reading the next line. Sorry.
And then, right, for their honeymoon, a week later, the 25th through the 31st, they hosted a bed-in for peace in their room in Amsterdam. Famous photos of that by...
That was bed-in part one, because bed-in part two takes place later in the year.
Oh, does it really? Uh-huh. So multiple bed-ins.
Mm-hmm. Zeppelin released multiple albums. They had multiple bed-ins.
Multiple bed-ins. That's I think that's a great protest, a great way to protest, right?
Just it's a real low effort, kind of safe. You're surrounded by pillows and soft things.
And this is before iPads and Netflix. So, I mean, they really had to figure out what they were going to do to keep occupied.
Invite people over.
Which they did. Lots of people. I think Annie Leibovitz has that famous photograph of the two of them sitting in bed. In April, on the 1st, the Beach Boys filed suit against their label for over $2 million in unpaid royalties and producer's fees for Brian Wilson. Capitol retaliates by deleting most of its Beach Boys catalog, limiting the band's income.
So does that mean there are sections of the Beach Boys catalog that will be never released again because it's gone?
I believe so, yeah.
Man, that just sucks.
At least... at least maybe for a while. I mean, it seems like Capitol is literally shooting them, not literally, but they're shooting themselves in the foot, or they shot themselves in the foot by doing it. So I could easily see them recanting that a few years later and said, oh, maybe we do like getting those royalties ourselves from Beach Boys music.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing for them to do because it's a bad business move. Not just it's a jerk move, but it's a bad business move.
Very bad business move. On April 20th, the LA Free Festival ended early due to riots and the arrest of 117 people.
You never saw that happening at the Civic Honda Accord Fest.
Because it was very Civic. Civic, I don't know. On the 22nd, the first complete performance of The Who's Tommy is done. And kind of a landmark for them, landmark album, landmark movie, landmark performance for The Who. The 24th, the Beatles made a $5.1 million counteroffer to the Northern Songs stockholders in an attempt to keep Associated TV from controlling the band's music. They'd go through so many different owners of the Beatles' music over the years. And I don't know, did McCartney, did he ever buy all that stuff back from Michael Jackson, or is it still owned by the Jackson estate?
I don't know, but I just remember he was actually kind of been out of shape when Jackson started using it for advertisements.
Right.
I do remember that being a story when, like, Revolution was used in a Nike ad.
Nike ads, right. Yep.
And I remember that there was a statement from Paul McCartney's people saying that he was disappointed that the Beatles music was being used to hawk shoes or something along those lines.
That's right. And he bought it in 1985.
Yeah.
So such a long time ago.
Which is what? When did they do Say?
In 1982. So it was just a couple of years after that.
I wonder how Paul felt about that move.
I bet he was like, "Oh, thanks a lot. You know, we do a couple great hit songs together. Well, we do one hit song together, and then The Girl Is Mine. And then you turn around and do this." Jackson in 1995 sold half of ATV to Sony for approximately $100 million, and together the two formed Sony ATV Music Publishing, which with Jackson and Sony each owning 50% of the company. So that's ATV owns the 4,000 song catalog of the Beatles music. Sony negotiated a deal on Jackson's behalf to reduce loan payments on his debts and purchased 50% of Jackson's 50% in 2006, which would give Sony 75% ownership of the catalog. Let's see, when he died in 2009, his share of the catalog came under the control of his estate. And then, there we go, in 2016, so last year, Sony officially bought out the rest of Michael Jackson's 50% for $750 million. So Sony is the sole owner of the Lennon-McCartney catalog, as well as Sony ATV's 750,000 songs. Now, McCartney wants to get back to where it once belonged. and he is filing suit. He he filed suit that's going to take place in 2018, which basically works with the 56-year period of copyrighted works released before 1978. So basically, he can't do this until 2018. And
I feel like he's just staying alive now so he can get control of his music back before he dies.
Maybe, right? Yeah. So look for more on this next year in 2018 as Paul McCartney hopefully gets control of the Beatles songs back. In April, on the 28th, Chicago released their debut album, released it as the group the Chicago Transit Authority, and later they just shortened that to Chicago.
And it is nothing like the Peter Cetera nightmare of the late 80s.
Yeah, no, the pop Chicago and early Chicago are night and day. And if you go out and buy the Chicago Greatest Hits album, it's like a double album. You really can just take that second disc
and use it as a coaster.
Use it as a coaster. Exactly. scrape ice off your windshield with it. The first disc in that double disc set is fantastic. And it's so, you forget what great songs like, yeah. Does anybody really know what time it
25
is?
25 or 64 is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Waiting for the break of day, searching for something to say, flashing lights against the sky.
64, right? Yeah, it's a great one. So go get that. Go get the first half of the
split it with your younger brother, because he won't know any better.
And they're another group that like totally messed around with their album titles, right? Like the
they had numbers for a while.
I can't even remember how they did that. Like, hold on, I'm pulling this up because I want to see. Here we go. 1967. They were formed 1967, but yeah, their debut album was 1969. And discography. Show me their discography. Here we go. Yeah. So the first one was called Chicago Transit Authority, then Chicago 3. There was no Chicago 2 because really Chicago was Chicago 2. Chicago Transit Authority was 1.
Chicago 1, yeah.
Right. They skipped Chicago 4 as well. So Chicago 3 came out in 71. Chicago 5 came out in 72.
Chicago 4 was probably that lost album where they got rid of the horns.
Right? But they did... Let's see, 10, 11, 12 was called Hot Streets. They really only had like a couple albums that weren't numbers, and they made it all the way up to, well, some greatest hits collections were like, they even numbered the greatest hits collection. So 26 was the most recent release by the band Chicago, and that was in 2014.
Wow.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, 36. Chicago 36.
Yeah, it's all Roman numerals.
It is, yes, exactly. Except for 21, which was spelled out 20, followed by the number 1.
Sometimes when you're going for the mystique, you're just trying. You're just trying too hard.
Totally. Yes, exactly. May 3rd, Sly and the Family Stone released Stand. It went on to be one of the top-selling albums of the decade. Everyday People almost made it onto my list as far as the playlist because it's such a great song. May 3rd, also, Jimi Hendrix was arrested in Canada for possession of heroin. He was released on $10,000 bail. A week later, the Turtles...
Opioids were a problem even then.
Oh, certainly, yes. Right, keep an eye on that, Mr. President. The 10th, the Turtles performed at the White House. Mark Volman falls off the stage 5 times.
I did not look for it, but now I want to. I want to see footage of this.
It's got to be video footage. So happy to go. Oh! About like the 4th or 5th time, he's just like stumbling all over the stage. I really want to.
He's concussed and bloody.
Right, exactly. And then on the 23rd, The Who released the album, Tommy, May 23rd. June 2nd, John and Yoko host another bed-in, this time in Canada. They record the song Give Peace a Chance with Tommy Smothers, Timothy Leary, and others.
I think this is the one where that famous picture comes from.
You're absolutely right. Yep. Totally.
So the other one was like a beta run of the
bed. It was
bed
the end. Test, right. We're going to test a test bed drive. here's some things we need to do for the next one of these, Yoko.
We need more pillows and better room service.
Right. Need to make sure we turn off the stove before we get in bed. June 13th, Mick Taylor joined the Rolling Stones.
And I forgot about them being such a powerhouse in the 60s, in the late 60s as well. I mean, I knew it, like in my heart, but right. It wasn't until I was doing this that I realized, again, one of my favorite songs of all time is released in 69 by the Stones.
Right, right. Yeah, a couple great. Oh, we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about that in the playlists. July 1st, Brian Eno begins his musical career as a member of Cornelius Cardew's Scratch Orchestra. Such a major influence in the electronica, prog,
yep,
eclectic. I mean, he.
Everyone knows who Brian Eno is now, but when he was part of Cornelius Cardew's orchestra, we had no idea what he was going to do. I don't think right. He had any idea, but yeah. The reason I stuck it in there was because he's turned into such an influential piece of music history.
Right. Right. July 3rd, Brian Jones is found dead in his swimming pool in England, not quite a month after he left the Rolling Stones. A couple days later, the Rolling Stones proceed with a free concert in London as a tribute to Jones. The audience estimates range from 250,000 to 400,000. Of course, with a free concert, you can't really be sure exactly how many people attended. July 31st, Elvis Presley returned to live shows in Vegas, and his residency would end on August 28th. I believe that is at what was the International, which is now Westgate. It was like the Las Vegas Hilton for a while.
Okay, so it's where Star Trek was, with the statue of Elvis there, right?
That's right. Okay. Exactly. But yeah, that was not just where his where he performed, but I mean, he lived there for months.
Which is why the statue's there.
Bring me another peanut butter and banana sandwich. August.
you'll have a statue at the MGM at some point, I'm sure.
I'm sure I will, only because I've paid for it. August 9th, I'm skipping that one. August 9th, members of the Manson family.
Wait, why are you skipping the 2nd? That's a big day.
It's not a big day for people who care. All right, I was born on August 2nd.
There we go.
Of this year, August 1969. My mom actually gave up going to Woodstock because she had an opportunity to go to Woodstock and couldn't go because of her pregnancy.
That would have been a much different story to tell.
I was born
at Woodstock. Yeah.
Yes. Well, when was, let's see, Woodstock was...
it's coming up.
Trying to find the dates. Oh, you've got the dates in here.
It's coming up.
All right. So August 9th. Members of the Manson family murder Sharon Tate and others in her home. Have you seen Helter Skelter? I haven't seen Helter Skelter, the film.
I have not seen Helter Skelter. I watched a lot of stuff on Manson recently, though. I'm not sure why. It's kind of been on Netflix or Hulu or something. But
oh, really?
Yeah, okay. There's been kind of an interest in that time period, I guess. And so I've just been kind of catching it when it comes on.
Interesting. All right. I'll have to look for that too. Cause it's something that I know is so huge. And the book Helter Skelter, was a bestseller when I was a kid. And I remember seeing the name of it and the freaky bloody writing on the cover and thinking, oh, that's scary, Mom.
Well, I just remember my first kind of knowledge of all of that, like the relationship with Helter Skelter to Manson was, thanks to Eddie Murphy and Delirious when he said that his neighborhood was so bad that the ice cream truck played Helter Skelter.
That's funny. All right. August 15th through the 17th. That was the dates for Woodstock, held in Bethel, New York on Yasgur's farm. And Joni Mitchell wrote a song about it, but because she was going to appear on the David. Was it David? Not David Frost.
I can't remember the name. We talked about this during Crosby, Stills.
We did. Right. And so they took it. Crosby, Stills and Nash took it, performed it there.
And that was their second show or debut show? I just remember it was early in their career and they went and performed at Woodstock as their first or second show.
I can't remember. But boy, that is how you do a concert lineup, right? I mean, Woodstock from what I remember from reading about the original one, shows went well into late evening, early morning. Like, I think there were still performances going on at 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And I think people started as early as 7 or 8 the next day. It felt like it was just wall to wall music.
Mm-hmm.
You just had a little bit of time to sleep in your little mud bath and then, then get up and watch the next performer.
We're not talking about that disaster a few years.
Fire Festival?
Yeah.
No, we are definitely not.
But that's, I was also talking about the other Woodstock too, which didn't work out as well as
Woodstock.
Yeah, that didn't work out as well as they thought it was going to either.
No. How come the only band that I remember performing at that, and I didn't go obviously, but the only band I remember performing at that was Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, there was Blues Traveler was there.
Were they?
Yeah, okay. Because John Popper made a joke about bad Diet Coke.
As opposed to the bad acid?
Uh-huh.
Fantastic. That's great.
But I can't tell you who else was there.
Wow. Let's see. September 11th, Janis Joplin released her first solo album, I Got Dem Old Cosmic Blues Again, Mama, after leaving the Big Brother and the Holding Company. September 13th, John and the Plastic Ono Band, John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band, performed at the Toronto Rock and Roll for Revival, which was another music festival. This one only 12 hours. He was backed by Eric Clapton, Klaus Voormann, Alan White. Other performers on the bill include Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, and this up-and-coming new band, we mentioned him earlier, Chicago. It is his first ever public rock performance without one or more of the Beatles since he met Paul McCartney in 1957. He decided before returning to the UK to leave the Beatles permanently, and during the show, a chicken is somehow in a feather pillow that Alice Cooper normally uses as a stage routine during his band's performance. Cooper, thinking that all birds can fly, throws the chicken into the audience, and fans tear the chicken to pieces and throw it back on stage. The event would be known as the Chicken Incident, and Cooper develops his reputation as a shock rocker.
By accident. That's how he got his reputation as a shock rocker.
As God
by accident.
I thought chickens could fly.
Oh, God bless the big guy.
The 24th, the Deep Purple performs with the Royal Philharmonic. It's their first collaboration, or the first collaboration, between a rock band and an orchestra.
Okay, so now that being said, what is your favorite collaboration between a rock band and an orchestra?
Oh, that's a great question. All right, this is really inside baseball one, but it was the Enzo. It was Split Enz and the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, so ENZSO was the name of the. And they performed all of Split Enz's biggest hits with full orchestra with the vocalist from Split Enz. And it was so, so good.
Okay, awesome. I think I'm going to go with the Metallica and the San Francisco Symphony.
That's a good one, too. Very good. Let's see. In October, October 14th, to be specific, the final single by Diana Ross and the Supremes is released. It's my favorite song by Diana Ross and the Supremes. Someday We'll Be Together. I just love that guitar thing that happens at the beginning. It's released, and it's the last number one single of 1969. After a farewell concert in January of 1970, Diana Ross leaves to pursue a solo career.
And producing the Jackson 5, which we find out about in a minute.
Oh, well, a spoiler alert.
Yeah, well.
In October 22nd, Led Zeppelin releases their second album, which contains the single Whole Lot of Love.
Yeah, and that guy, I think that really did set the tone for the coming decade.
It totally did, yeah. And late in the year, this bleeds, its popularity bleeds into 1970. November of this year, Simon and Garfunkel give a live concert in Iowa where they record Bye Bye Love for the upcoming album Bridge Over Troubled Water. They also perform live shows on the 8th, which won't be released until 1999, and the 11th. That isn't released until the 90s as well.
Okay, I've been in the Midwest in winter, yeah. And performing a concert in Iowa in November...
Because they do outside outdoor concerts.
Yeah,
right?
they're hard. They're hardcore. They're not going to do some inside squishy warm concert. They want that takes some cojones to record a concert in Iowa in November.
They are a rock, Simon Garfunkel.
Yep, they are.
After 7 years off of the charts, Elvis Presley hits number one on November 1st with Suspicious Minds, a cover of a song by, oh, I should know this. It's a really simple dude, simple name.
Like Simple Minds?
Not Simple Minds. Suspicious Simple Minds. I'm looking it up.
Are they suspicious?
I'm suspicious. Mark James. See, who can remember a name like Mark James? Come on now.
Two first names.
That's right. Exactly. On November 4th, David Bowie releases his self-titled album, which is later known, goes under the name Space Oddity, which is a name taken from the first single from the album. November 7th.
The Stones. Sorry, I forgot an S.
Okay, gotcha. The Rolling Stones start their U.S. tour in Fort Collins, Colorado, just an hour and a half north of where I live right here.
And the again, Stone. November, Colorado.
Yeah, but they would have performed inside. They're
yes,
not outdoor.
They might have performed inside, but how many people would actually show up to Fort Collins in a snowstorm?
You know what? That's true.
I-80 closes down in your neck of the woods.
25, we got I-70 and I-25. It would have been up to I-25. And yeah, there are parts of I-25 that would probably close in major snowstorms. But that's true. I mean, you think about artists who start their tours in April in the South and then start making their way, you know, north in the sweep, like we get to, you know, Fargo in August or something like that.
I don't think any large bands are playing Fargo.
No, you're probably right. But you know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. I don't think anybody really plays Fargo on purpose. Sorry, no, Fargo.
No, might end up in Fargo accidentally. November 29th, Billboard magazine changes its policy of charting the A and B sides of 45 singles on its pop chart. The former policy charted the two sides separately, but the new policy considers both sides as one chart entry. The Beatles are the first beneficiary of the new policy, as their current 45 single featuring Come Together on one side and Something on the other accrue enough combined points to make the single a number one pop hit. Similarly, Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son and Down on the Corner accrue enough combined points to reach number three weeks later.
I never really thought of Come Together as a song that needed help getting to number one.
Help? No, no, it was Something. No, and I don't think it's not a matter of really needing help. You know, just the fact that I imagine that a lot of the people who bought one would have bought the other if they were released as two separate singles.
Mm-hmm.
But buying it, see, how does that work then? If it's a chart entry, aren't those based on sales?
I don't know. And it's basically a 145 entry. Maybe it's on some sort of other, I don't know. I don't know how Billboard works, to be honest with you.
It's based on the popularity. So I want to look this up here. Let's see here. They sales and streams charts are monitored on a Friday to Thursday since July 2015. Obviously, streaming doesn't matter, but I want to see the methods. A song had to be commercially available as a single. Here we go. Originally, Billboard had separate charts for different measures of popularity, including disc jockey playings, jukebox song selection, and best-selling records in retail stores. Now, to accomplish a weekly chart, the radio is mostly used to compile a list. So I guess if it's requested a lot,
okay,
that's what puts it on the charts.
Okay, so, you said something interesting, and I'm trying to figure out how it would work. Jukebox plays. Does right. that mean they somehow tracked how often a song got played in the jukebox?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I think...
Was there some dude sitting next to it? Right?
No, but I'm sure the old Wurlitzer ones, like, you could look and see how many times B9 was selected. And maybe places had to report that. Maybe they didn't report it, like in your crummy dive bar that just has this broken down Wurlitzer in the back before there was a live internet connection or anything to it.
But I was going to say, it's a live analog system. It's not, especially back when jukeboxes were a viable form of music listening.
Right.
So did it have like a punch card that they spit out or?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, there must have been. There must have been some sort of punch card. Right, because it wasn't recording it digitally, like noting it digitally to an SD card that they could pull out.
Yeah.
It was something, for sure. There had to be something because the owners, you know, like if you had a jukebox in your bar, you weren't responsible for buying singles and putting them in there. right? So like you'd get the distributor who'd show up and load the jukebox mm-hmm. with the singles, and they probably would take out some punch cards or something, some sort of document that would say how many times each of those songs got played, and then they'd have to probably write down a list of what was B9 and what was B10 and what was B11.
Selected. Unless they had some dude who was paid to sit next to the jukebox and just write down every time Susie came over in her poodle skirt and she played, you know, Rocker on the Clock.
Oh, that'd be such a fascinating thing to learn. I wonder how they kept track of that.
Okay. Special Soundography episode, the history of jukeboxes.
Yeah, no kidding. Right. I want to make a note of that too. Let's see here. Here we go. Most played songs on jukeboxes as counted by the internal song counters in select machines placed where teenagers were most likely to use them. So
it was like a click system. Like you had the like a turnstile,
like little odometer that would say, whoa, somebody's playing the Everly Brothers again. All right. Good enough.
Yeah. Wow.
That's cool.
Okay.
That's real. All right. Let's see here. On December 6th, the Jackson 5 released their debut album, and Diana Ross presented the Jackson 5. Produced that album?
Oh, it's called Diana. The album was called Diana Ross Presents the Jackson 5.
Right. Okay, I'm sorry. That was the name of the debut album, mm-hmm. Diana Ross Presents the Jackson 5. Okay, gotcha. Eric Clapton, later that same month, Ginger Baker, Steve Winwood, you know, these no-name people, I'm sorry that we have to bring up these people who you've never heard of before, got together and formed the band Blind Faith and released that very famous album that had, somebody's daughter on the cover. Or am I thinking of, I am thinking of the right album. Yeah, it was Blind Faith. And what was the name of that album?
I Can See Clearly Now.
No, it was the one that had
I'm sorry.
The young girl topless holding a plastic airplane.
Oh, crap.
And she was the daughter, Mary Origoshen, and she was the daughter of Bob Seidemann to produce a cover shot. Seidemann announced that they should find a nice female virgin, and they ended up with one of the most controversial pop images ever made, an 11-year-old girl with her top off fondling a futuristic toy aircraft. Let's see.
The wording of that's the most controversial thing ever.
Right. Fondling. Exactly. she's now a highly regarded alternative therapist practicing shiatsu, shiatsu massage, acupuncture, and breath work. But I thought she was related to somebody. I guess not. Never mind. It was like one of the most controversial record covers ever released.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That takes us through the end of the year. And, so what statistics do we have for 1969?
So one of the things I wanted to bring up was, although that both of these things I'm going to bring up are released in late 68, they impacted the charts throughout 1969. And one of them was Wendy Carlos's album Switched on Bach. It was one of the first classical albums to sell 500,000 copies and help bring classical music into the popular sphere once again. Also, Mason Williams' classical Gas.
Yeah.
Where it was
almost included in my list, by the way.
Yeah. It was a classical guitar, in addition to being accompanied by one of the first successful music videos. The composition won 3 Grammy Awards, Best Instrumental Composition, Best Contemporary Pop Performance, Instrumental, and Best Music Instrumental Arrangement. So even though they were released in late 68, they still had a huge impact on 69. And as a matter of fact, classical gas is a thing that is still having an impact because, like, even the Simpsons make jokes about it. Yes. Or have made jokes about it. I mean,
yeah, Lisa performs it at a protest for the nuclear reactors.
Yeah, uh-huh, that's right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, if I could play guitar and could play it really well, that would probably be one of the first songs I'd teach myself is classical gas, because that is such a great, like, what a finger workout that thing mm-hmm. is on the frets to be able to play that.
One of my friends decided he wanted to play saxophone just so he could do Baker Street.
Exactly. See, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Totally get that.
I wanted to also bring up, you know, we talk about pop culture too. The movies that came out in 69 were Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Easy Rider, True Grit, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, Hello Dolly, the original Italian Job, Sweet Charity, which we talked about before. That has music in it that I think you liked, and you didn't realize it was about a prostitute or a stripper.
It was, right. It was that Sammy Davis Jr. song.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then The Illustrated Man, which is based on a book by Ray Bradbury.
Right. Yep.
And then Pippi Longstocking, which I, oddly enough, have a lot of fondness for those films, because when I was a kid, they used to play at the Saturday matinees at the theater on base, and I used to walk down and just watch them because there was nothing else to do. And I thought they were kind of fun.
I love those books. Yeah, no, I was all about those. And Encyclopedia Brown. I remember reading all that stuff when I was a kid. What was her name? Lindgren, I think. Astrid Lindgren was the author of that.
I think so, yeah. But yeah. Thanks to those afternoon matinees, I developed a strong love of the Japanese monster movie
and sure.
Pippi Longstocking.
Neither of which you'll ever see at the same
theater.
Unless
I'm running the festival, they're never crossing the streams.
That's right. Pippi Longstocking followed by Mothra versus Godzilla.
Pippi Longstocking versus Godzilla.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, let's get to our playlists. In lieu of our Stairway to Heaven songs, it doesn't make sense for us to do that when we've got a much larger playlist that we work from here. Instead of the usual 5 songs or 6 songs, we've got 10 each.
Or 7 if you're Brian and Squeeze.
Well, yeah, right. Hey, you know, Spock's beard is coming up. I'm sure we're going to have a hard time limiting you to 5 on that one.
No, I'll just have one that runs 43 minutes long.
Oh, boy. It's not Dream Theater. All right. First song, and it's going to be a callback. It's going to be something I've brought up on the show before when we did our Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young episode, but Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. So badly I must cry out loud. I am lonely. I am yours. You are mine. You are what you are. You make it hard. Probably my favorite song from this year. I just love the different chunks of that song and how they all fit together so beautifully. And the harmonies are just so fantastic. It's one that if it pops up on the radio, and it popped up in my playlist constantly while I was coming up with my favorite songs of 1969. And every single time it came up, I had to sing it because it's such a great song.
Now, did you do the Kevin Gilbert ending or the original?
Oh, right. I did the original. Okay. Come on now. Yeah. Second was Can't Find My Way Home. By the aforementioned Blind Faith, that super group. Kind of calling this one back too, because I talked about this on the New Order episode, but because they do a cover of it as electronic, or Bernard Sumner did a cover of it when he was part of electronic. But I love this song, and I love the intro guitar work, which is probably Clapton, let's face it. And it's such a great tune. Come and Get It by Badfinger. This is a song that was written by Paul McCartney, gave it to them to record for the film The Magic Christian.
Which is a Joseph Smith story, right?
I don't know. I'd actually never heard of that movie before. But
I have no idea.
Yeah. I'll have to look that one up. But it's one that that Paul McCartney recently recorded himself as part of a project called Hollywood Vampires, and does his own version of Come and Get It. Speaking of the Beatles, my number four song, I had to have something from Abbey Road, because that was such a fantastic album. And if I could have, I would have picked that whole second half of side two that's got like Me and Mr. Mustard and Golden Slumbers and Her Majesty and all that stuff is like one big mega mix. But I decided to settle on the song Because. It's just a beautiful song. Some amazing harmonies in there, and very sparse keyboard instrumentation behind that, keyboard and bass guitar instrumentation behind that. Number five, Can't Get Next to You by The Temptations. Now, when you listen to this song, you'll hear a lot of the same kinds of things that you hear in their other song from this year, their other big hit from this year, Papa Was a Rolling Stone. The different vocalists each kind of getting a line to sing on their own, and a lot of the same congas and arrangement. I can turn the gray sky blue. I can make it rain whenever I want it to. But for whatever reason, I feel like this is just a funkier package. It's such a great song. Speaking of funk, Time Is Tight by Booker T and the MGs is my next one. It's instrumental. And again, it was probably between this and Classical Gas. Which instrumental I was going to pick. I had both of them in the shortlist before I nailed it down.
My favorite Booker T is Green Onions.
Of course it is. That's so everybody's favorite.
I'm really glad that you picked this one, though, because it's also very, very good.
It's cool. It's that Hammond organ.
Thank you.
No relation. But but it's that once you hear it, and you'll hear it right now, you'll know exactly what it is. Number seven, here's where we have a little bit of a parallel. The Who, of course, Something from Tommy, again, such a great album. For me, it's See Me, Feel Me. Feel me, touch me, feel me. Listening to you, I get the music. Which starts out with that Roger Daltrey, see me, feel me, and that's good, that's all right, right? And then you get 1 minute in, and then you get that swell of the music, that build up with the listening to you, I get the music, which continues on through the rest of the song. And I love, 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 love that part of the whole album. That's my tears welling up, goosebumps on my arm moment from Tommy. Next up is Breakfast in Bed by Dusty Springfield. Man, you listen to her vocals. And she is so smoky and sultry, and this song, it's like it's sung from the point of view of the other woman who is like trying to keep her man there with her before he has to race back to his wife. And you feel for her, like, oh man, she's obviously totally in love with this guy, and she wants to serve him breakfast in bed, and she's super sweet. And then you hear her like sultry, smoky voice, and you wonder how can he leave this woman to go back to his wife? Cause she sounds so like, sultry and awesome. Breakfast in Bed by Dusty Springfield. This one is actually covered too by Chrissy Hynde and UB40, and they do a really good job with it.
Cool.
And turn it into a duet.
Cool.
Number 9 on my list, The Kinks' Victoria.
Croquis Lawns, Village Green, Victoria was my queen. Victoria, 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 Victoria.
So they released a concept album called Arthur, or The Decline and Fall of the British Empire. Kind of a very sarcastic look at where the UK was politically at that time, and the song Victoria, about Queen Victoria, it's a barnstormer, man. It rocks, and it's got some really weird Ray Davies vocals where you're like, is that really Ray Davies I'm listening to? And the answer is yes, yeah, that really is Ray Davies, but he's doing some weird stuff with his vocals.
Another idea for a future show.
Yeah.
List of best concept albums.
Ooh, I love it. Yes, that's a for sure. That is absolutely for sure. And then the last one is Baraba Jagal, which is subtitled Love is Hot. This is...
Which is the only way I'll refer to it.
Yeah. He very wise in the huddle of Scott Joe now. She came to feed the day with his wildflower.
Love is Hot.
Yeah, because I'm not saying that other word.
Because it's a made up word. They just made up the word. It's not named after anybody. But Baraba Jagal, once you hear the song and it's here in the chorus and stuff, it's like, all right, Baraba Jagal. They were inspired by Goo Goo Gajoo and the Walrus by the Beatles. It was Donovan, but he was backed by the Jeff Beck Band. And it's such a great combination of the two. And it's got so much funk to it. Really, really cool.
Cool list.
And that, friend, is my list.
So I have to say that I'm really happy that our lists are as divergent, because it does give you an example of just how varied music was
in this time in music.
Because we only cross over once.
Yeah.
And I think that we kind of even don't cross over like genres that much.
No. And there were a couple times that I might've picked something different. Like Time of the Season, I think if you hadn't picked that,
No, you're fine. Everyone will know soon.
Yeah. But, Time of the Season by the Zombies was probably going to be on my list if it wasn't on yours. And same with, I'll wait till you get to your number 10.
Okay. All right.
I would have chosen.
So my first one is Easy to Be Hard by Three Dog Night. It's a cover from a song from the musical Hair.
Can people be so heartless? How can people be so cruel? Easy to be hard, easy to be cold.
I have a very secret, not so secret love of Three Dog Night. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I have always had, some of my earliest memories are Three Dog Night songs. I have always liked them. I think they're great musicians. I think they're great singers. So I picked the one that seemed to be 1969 centric. So Easy to Be Hard.
Cool.
Very cool. Here's our crossover. I picked Pinball Wizard by The Who from Tommy.
Sure plays a mean pinball. He stands like a statue, becomes part of the machine, feeling all the bumpers, always plays.
It's a landmark piece of music. Everyone knows it. I would think most people love it. If they don't, then we'll have to talk.
Yeah, for sure. No, this is such a, it's no surprise that we had to have something from Tommy on our list, something from Abbey Road on our list, because two of the biggest albums of that year, for sure.
And go on to be incredibly prolific throughout the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even now, kind of. So,
right.
The next one's actually from a musical. It's from the musical 1776 that was released this year in 69.
Come sing Hosanna, Hosanna.
In our breeding and our manner, we are cool. Come ye cool, cool, considerate set. We'll dance together to the same minuet.
And it's cool, cool, considerate men. And it's just a great song from a great musical. And I tried to think of others that would go in there, but they're too story centric. So I was trying to find one that was not as story heavy in reliance. So it kind of stood on its own, but right. check out 1776. There's a version out there where Data plays the part of John Adams.
Really?
Yeah. And he does a killer job.
I have to take a look at that.
All right. So the next one, I actually picked a cover.
What? I know this is, this was a surprising one for me too. Go ahead.
Okay. So I picked Light My Fire by Stevie Wonder covering The Doors.
Know that I would be a liar if I were to say to you, hey girl, you know we couldn't get much higher. Hey, come on.
Yeah, that's cool. This is one actually I didn't even know existed. I didn't know Stevie Wonder covered this, covered Light My Fire. So it was really cool to see this. And this was the year that Stevie Wonder released My Sherry Amore.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you to go with this one, I think is a really good choice.
Well, it kind of kills two birds for me. I like The Doors. I like what they did. I love Light My Fire. And then I went with Stevie Wonder because he's done, you know, he does a great version of it.
It's cool. It's really cool. I gotta look for it.
Okay. The next one is The Time of the Season by The Zombies.
Love runs high in this time. Give it to me easy. And let me try with pleasured hands
to take you in this time to
promised lands
to show you everyone it's the time.
This actually was released as a single in 69. So I'm kind of hedging a little bit, but it's there. So don't back off me, bro. it's just when you think of this period of music or this period in time, I think instinctually this is the song that plays in my head when I think about this period of time.
Sure. Yeah. No, I get it too.
And so that's why I as soon as I heard it, I'm like, oh, this is the definition of 1969 right here.
Totally is. And this was going to be, I would have probably included this on my list. I really like The Zombies and this is such a great choice.
So now we enter the part of the list, which is Barry Hammond predictable.
Right. Yeah.
So you'll understand here in a minute. The first one is The Court of the Crimson King by King Crimson. My only comment was, who didn't think I was going to put this one on my list? So,
right.
Yeah.
No, if I would have looked at a list of releases of albums in 1969, full releases of albums, and I saw King Crimson on here, I'd be like, all right, well, here's one that's definitely going to be on the list. And as you go down the rest of these, I'll say, yep.
Genesis released their debut album this year, and so I picked the song Silent Sun.
The motion of a turning wheel. Can't you stop it and look around?
Baby, you feel so close. I wish you could see my love.
And it's very rough Genesis. This is not 80s Genesis. This isn't even sophisticated Lamb Lies Down on Broadway Genesis. This is early, like adolescent Genesis, but it has glimmers of what they're going to be. And I had to give them the respect they were due because of who they ended up being, both in my listening experiences, but also as they matured and turned into the band that everyone respects now. Mm-hmm. The next one, again, another gimme, Set the Controls for Heart of the Sun by Pink Floyd. I felt like this had to, Pink Floyd had to be represented for one thing. And this is a song that I have heard covered by other progressive bands, and they do great jobs. And when you go back and hear Pink Floyd do it, it's just kind of magical because there's that kind of musical insanity in that they had in the early years. The next one, Yesterday and Today by the band Yes. Again, from their debut album, not quite.
And again, not a shock.
this is again this a debut album, not Roundabout Yes in any way, shape, or form, but definitely you can see where Roundabout comes from.
Sure.
And then probably, like I've mentioned before, this is probably one of my favorite songs of all time. This is the Rolling Stones' "Give Me Shelter." I think we've mentioned it a couple times in other episodes, but I love this song. And recently, Stone Sour did a cover of it with Lizzie Hale. And it's great. Okay. And I love it when songs continue to evolve with new fingers in the pie, kind of.
Right.
So I had to put this in there.
Now, I think I may even have the year wrong. I think I was going to say Sympathy for the Devil would have been, had it come across my list, it would have probably made it into my top 10. But now that I'm looking, I think this actually, Sympathy for the Devil might have been the year after. That might have been 1970.
Oh. So just missed it by that much.
So never mind. I was going to say this would have been my choice. Oh, no, I'm sorry. June 1968. So it was the year before. It was okay. 1968 with Sympathy for the Devil.
Well, and then, you know, it was done so much better years later by Guns N' Roses.
Okay. Moving on.
My jokes are not Brian's. Anything that Hammond says is not the fault of Brian Hibbett.
That's right, exactly. Views represented by
jokes told by Hammond do not represent the thoughts of Brian Hibbett.
Exactly. Very good. Great list, both of us. I'm excited to put these up on for you to put these up on Spotify for people to get them to listen to them, which they can do, and I'll tell you how to do that in just a moment. But our next episode, it's another sponsored show. Big thanks to our patrons. This time it's Joe Acosta for stepping up, being a Patreon at the right level. And you can do that too. You can make us listen to whatever you want. Joe is going to make us listen to Weezer, which I'm kind of excited about because there's brand new Weezer stuff that I haven't listened to yet. And I'm hearing very mixed reviews on it, so I can't wait to kind of get a listen and make my own decisions and see what I think of all this stuff.
So this is good for me because my experience with Weezer really is their one or two radio hits.
And Buddy Holly.
Yeah, and Jonas from Guitar Hero.
Oh, right, sure. Yeah, I can see that. So cool. Well, that's going to be next week. Big thanks to Joe Acosta again for putting that together, for making us do that. If you want to get in touch with us, email us. soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address you need to use. Put in your address book. Mail us something anytime you want. Anytime you've got feedback on a show, we'd love to hear it.
Or questions, comments, concerns.
All that stuff. Of course, another way to do it, if you want everybody to see it, is to tweet us. At the Soundography, that's our Twitter address. Soundography.com is our website. That's where you can download earlier episodes of the show. And you can also check out the show notes for this or any other episode, which always includes our Spotify playlist. It includes links to buy the music you hear on this show, as well as a place where you can put your comments in addition, right? Your comments for this very episode. It also gives you a link to where you can become a Patreon and help support Soundography. Give us a couple bucks a month. It's not a lot of money, and it helps us out so, so much and keeps these things coming. We really, really appreciate it. Of course, you can do your reviews in any of those places, iTunes, the website, Twitter, wherever you want to do it. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. Here's a little reminder. If you are a patron, you're invited to our special Q&A, which we'll be holding on September 15th. Make sure that you tune in for that if you are a patron. We'd love to get a chance to talk with you, answer your questions about the show, hear your recommendations, your ideas, your thoughts, all that stuff. That's going to be, once again, September 15th, 2017. We're looking forward to talking to all of you. One last time, next week's show is going to be Weezer, and that's it. Hammond, anything else?
No.
As we leave 1969 in the dust?
No, I'm glad that you were born.
I'm glad I was born, too. It made it a lot easier to do all this talking. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brandy, but saying that is going to do it for Soundography. We're going to see you next time right here.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.